in. He wasn't protecting me by keeping the knowledge secret. He was protecting himself. From me. So Anishka knew the real name of your kind, and because of what she did with it, you don't trust me enough to tell it.
Yes.
He said it so simply, the admission that he did not wholly trust me. And it stung. The Slua, I said, pushing aside the hurt. They come from there, too. He nodded.
Yes, although they are minions of the Dark Court. It's possible they followed us here on their own, but I suspect she sent them. And keeps sending them, which is why we can't seem to get rid of the damn things.
She. He traced a finger around the hilt of the sword, obviously considering how much he wanted to tell me.
The in-between spaces is ruled by two courts. My many times great uncle is the king of summer. She is the queen of winter.
A shiver ran through me, and I swore I could smell the scent of ice and frost on the air. A memory tickled the back of my mind, but for the life of me I could not bring it into focus. I assume she must remain nameless. His fingers tightened around the hilt. You say there is power in a name, but I know yours and it doesn't seem to do me any good. The silence hung low and heavy, but I could feel his guilt. Or not? My voice cracked and I clenched my teeth. He sucked in a breath.
You know what I am called, but not the name that binds me.
I recoiled away from him to the far end of the boat, but it wasn't far enough. Take me back, I hissed. I've had enough of this. I don't care to be near you right now. I'm tired of your deception.
Cecile, please.
He reached for me, but I clambered to my feet, causing the boat to rock wildly. I'll swim back if you don't turn the boat around. He withdrew his arm.
Please, Cecile, let me explain.
I watched him, warily.
If you knew my true name, you would have complete and utter control of me, he said softly. You'd be able to compel me to do whatever you wished, and I would have no choice but to do what you ordered, whether that be to slaughter one or slaughter thousands. I would have no liberty. I would be your slave.
He grimaced.
I'd be a weapon.
And is that what you think of me? I replied, gripping the edge of the boat for balance. That I would use you that way? His shoulders trembled.
I don't know.
The water of the lake surged and the boat plunged up and down, threatening to overturn. I fell to my knees on the cushions. Tristan! He jerked, looking around as if surprised at what he'd done. Then he bowed his head.
I'm sorry.
The water stilled, becoming as smooth as glass, the effect managing to be somehow more frightening than the waves.
I wish I was not what I am.
His voice was twisted with anguish.
I wish I was not who I am. I wish I had met you in different circumstances, in a place far away from here, where there was no magic, politics, and deception. Somewhere, things could be different between us. I wish I was someone else.
He raised his head.
But I am what and who I am. And all the wishes in the world will not change that.
All my anger fled, and I sank down onto the pillows, my fingers twisting the tassels on one of them as his words sank in. And with them came the understanding of the enormous responsibility that came not with his birth or position, but with what he was. There was nothing that could change that. Yet still I had to ask, how do you wish things were between us? One corner of his mouth turned up.
How can you ask that? You know how I feel. You feel what I feel.
I shook my head. Sometimes it's hard to tell what emotions are mine and what are yours. There were times that I thought maybe you. I sighed. But then I decided it was my own wishful thinking.
I did.
His voice cracked and he swallowed hard.
From the beginning, I wanted you. But that first night, you looked at me like I was a monster. You were terrified that I was going to make you.
He broke off, his face tightening.
And later, he sighed, being around you was the sweetest torture. I wanted to touch you, hold you, kiss you. I wanted all of you.
His shoulders slumped.
But I was afraid of what would happen if I gave in to my desire. If I let myself love you.
You were afraid it would break the curse.
That was only part of it.
I barely heard him speak, his voice was so quiet.
I was afraid. I am afraid of loving you. Knowing that someday you will go and leave me here.
I shuddered, blinking fast to hold back tears. That's not how it's supposed to be. It certainly wasn't how I'd imagined it. In my mind's eye, I had always thought of us gaining freedom together, walking out into the sun together. But that wasn't what Tristan envisioned. He saw me leaving on my own and never turning back. There were so many things I wanted to show you, I whispered. Things you have never seen.
What sort of things?
He asked softly. I thought about it for a minute. I wanted you to see the world as it changes through the year, not the perpetual sameness it is here.
Describe it to me. Tell me about winter.
I lay back on the silken cushions, closed my eyes, and remembered. My father's farm is far enough up the mountain slopes that in winter the snow can pile so deep that only trees and houses stick out. Tiny flakes of ice fall from the sky and melt on the tip of your tongue. On the most bitterly cold days, the air is at its clearest, and you can see for leagues all around. The boat rocked as he shifted, my skirts pressing down against my legs as he knelt over me, his weight pressing my hips into the cushions. The clasp of my cloak opened with a click, the velvet soft against my skin as he pushed it back, baring my shoulders. His finger trailed over my collarbone, leaving hot flames of desire in their wake. I felt his breath warm against my throat, and I gasped, my heart beating so hard I was certain he could hear it.
"And spring,"
he whispered in my ear, his hair brushing softly against my cheek. A smile curved over my lips. The days get warmer, bit by bit. The sun shines. The snow starts to melt, and water runs in rivulets down the icicles hanging from the eaves. Bits of green start to poke through the snow and buds form on the tree branches. Then, in what seems like an instant, all the snow is gone and replaced by lush grass greener than any emerald, more vibrant than anything an artist could paint. The rainstorms come, blocking out the sun and turning midday to dusk. Lightning flashes across the sky and thunder echoes across the mountains. The spring rain comes down so hard and heavy that it soaks you to the bone in an instant, and the seas boil with the ferocity of the winds. Tristan's lips brushed against the pulse in my throat, and it felt like I had my own storm raging inside of me. My whole body trembled as he kissed a line of fire up my neck, to my jaw, and then rested his cheek against mine.
Summer?
I can't remember, I murmured, my mind a chaos of emotion.
Yes, you can.
His fingers ran up my sides, separated from my skin by only a thin layer of silk. I squeezed my eyelids tighter and tried to think, tried to visualize the land. But all I could see in my mind's eye was Tristan. All I could feel was passion, both mine and his, burning like a beacon on a starless night. I wanted him, needed him. Nothing else would satisfy the hunger building low in my belly. Flowers, I whispered. Fields of wildflowers, every color of the rainbow. The animals grow shiny and fat, and the fields of wheat grow tall and golden. The warmth drives away the memory of winter, and the air is so heady and wet that each breath is like a drink of water. And the sun. My voice trembled, and I wrapped my arms around his neck, burying my fingers in his hair. The sun rises every morning like a god on fire, flushing your skin pink, giving life to everything until he disappears beyond the horizon every night. Behind my closed lids, my eyes stung, and I bit my lip. Tristan stroked my hair, and I opened my eyes staring into his soul, which was filled with all the sympathy, sorrow and longing that I felt in my heart for what I had lost, for what he had never had, and for what he would never have if I did what he'd asked and abandoned my quest to break the curse.
I love you, Cecile,
he said, and my breath caught. It was one thing to feel it, and quite another to hear the words from his lips. He kissed me, gently at first, and then harder as his control vanished. My lips parted, and the kiss deepened, opening up a floodgate of heat that tore through my body. Rational thought slipped away, and all that was left was need and desire. I felt his hands on me, and I tore at his coat, pulled off his shirt, and dug my fingers into the hard muscles lining his back. Felt his breath hot and ragged against my lips, and at the plunging neckline of my dress. The air was cold against my legs as my skirts rode up, and I wrapped my ankles around him, pulling him down against me. All I wanted was him, and I wanted everything. The hilt of his sword dug into my ribs, and I grabbed at his belt, fumbling with unpracticed hands with the buckle.
Cecile, stop.
I barely heard him. My body felt like a wild thing completely out of my control.
Cecile.
He caught hold of my wrists and pinned them down against the cushions.
Enough. You overestimate my degree of self-control.
I looked up at him, hurt and confused. Why should you need any? We're married. I am yours, and you, I said, are mine. I struggled against his grip, but he was stronger than I was. Stronger than any human possibly could be. Have we not sacrificed enough? His lips pressed down warm and sweet. He rested his forehead against mine.
I want you. I've wanted this for so long.
He bit his lip.
But there could be consequences of that.
The chaos retreated from my mind, replaced by the cool feel of logic. You mean a child? He nodded and let go of my wrists.
If we had a child, it would be as bound to this place as I am.
Smoothing back the hair from my face, he said,
Then what would you do? Stay out of obligation and give up life on the outside? Or be like your mother, and only visit when the mood strikes you?
I jerked away from him. Don't say that. I'm nothing like her. He sat back on his heels, his face unreadable, and the combination of our emotions was a tangled web that I was having difficulty sorting through. I stared at him, and eventually it came to me. Anticipation. But of what? What did he want me to say?
You need to decide what life you want,
he said, his eyes searching mine. I covered my face with both hands, frustrated. I can't do this, Tristan. I'm not like you. I can't plan out every moment of my future, every decision I'm going to make. Silence.
Of course not.
His voice was cold, but the shock of his grief stung through me like an icy spear.
After all, you never chose to come here, never chose any of this. Who could blame you for wanting to leave? And what sort of fool am I for wishing that you would stay?
A chill swept through me. Tristan, that isn't what I meant. But he was already pulling his shirt over his head. The boat moving swiftly under an invisible force back to the tunnel entrance. I love you, I pleaded, but the words sounded weak even to me. I wouldn't leave you here alone.
So you say.
His voice was emotionless, posture stiff. But the pain I had caused him made me feel sick.
But you are human, Cecile. So why should I believe anything that comes out of your mouth?
Tristan! I reached for him, but he turned away, moving to the front of the boat.
We need to go back. They'll be missing us by now.
The boat bumped against the steps, grinding to a halt, and Tristan leapt out. It was magic, not his hands, that lifted me out of the boat. And it was magic that steadied me as I climbed the slippery steps back to the tunnel. After everything that had happened to us, it seemed that words from my own lips had done the most damage of all.
Chapter 29. Tristan. I stared, bleary-eyed, at the trunk of the tree, absently letting my power flow without providing it much direction. Please, just hold it up, I mumbled. I don't care how you go about it, just don't drop any rocks. It was the wrong way to manage the magic. The structure was architecturally complex, and with the amount of activity in the earth as of late, it required my full attention, which was rather difficult, given that Cecile was the center of my every thought. Every day, every hour, every minute, every bloody waking breath, which was a substantial number of breaths, considering I rarely had more than a few consecutive hours of sleep in the time since she'd arrived, which had clearly caused me to lose my mind. What other explanation could there be for my hoping she would stay? We'd kidnapped her from her family and forced her to marry someone she didn't even know. Something that wasn't even human. I'd treated her dreadfully for nearly our entire marriage. And still, she'd saved my life. Told me that she loved me. But what did that even mean? Cecile could lie. I'd watched her do it countless times. The tiny little mistruths she employed without any real intention of being deceitful. It wasn't in her nature to be manipulative or devious, but it was in mine. How many secrets was I keeping from her? Layers and layers, I thought. Many were those of my people, but some were mine alone. She knew it, too. Knew that I kept her in the dark, and still she trusted me implicitly. I could see it in her eyes. A blind, unfaltering faith that I would never hurt her, despite my having done exactly that on so many occasions. She lived in the present, always running off in the heat of the moment and saying exactly what she thought, rarely considering how the things she said or the decisions she made would affect the future. I was the exact opposite. Almost every action I took or decision I made was designed to affect circumstances months, years, even decades down the road. I'd always thought it was the prudent way to live. But now I feared I would wake up one day an old man, with my past wasted and no future left to live. Loving her had changed me, pulled me into the present and made me want to give myself to her as wholly and completely as I could. But I was who I was, and I could not let go completely. Could not trust her the way my heart wanted to, because I could see the way it would go. I would give her everything I had, love her with every breath of my being. I would have months, perhaps even a year of happiness before my other plans came to fruition. Then I would be bound by my own promise to let her go. And she would leave. Closing my eyes, I watched a specter of her future self walking down River Road and out onto the beach, never looking back. The pain was worse than a spike of iron through the heart. My mind, always attuned to where Cecile was, sensed that she was on the move. The dull throb of her misery, misery that I had caused, was a beacon allowing me to trace her progress from the palace down into the city. I didn't like her out and about like this. The people had mixed feelings about her. Abandoning the tree, I hurried down several flights of stairs and across a bridge into the merchant district. Though she was shorter than everyone around, I caught glimpses of red hair as she walked slowly through the crowd, her guards following a few paces behind. She didn't seem to realize that I was following. I could think of countless instances when she'd been so lost in thought that I could have walked up and tapped her on the shoulder before she'd noticed me. How many times had I followed her through the glass gardens, listening to her sing? How many times? And never once did she seem to sense I was there. Or maybe she just didn't care. Turning down an alley, I rounded a corner to get a better view of the market and froze. Cecile was talking to Jerome Girard's son, Christophe. Almost without thinking, I ordered my magic to dim, letting the shadows wrap round me like a cloak. So you can better spy on your wife. Christophe handed her a peach, and I watched her bite into it, the yellow juices trickling down her slender fingers. She was at ease with him in a way she wasn't with me, and it was obvious that he fancied her from the way he twitched about, the color on his cheeks, and the way he peeked down the bodice of her dress when she wasn't looking. I felt a scowl rise to my face. He was good enough looking, I supposed. Shorter than I was, but broader, with the thick muscles all the farmers seemed to have. His hair was the color of the hay his mule was munching on, and brilliant blue eyes shone out of his tanned face. Normally, he was the smiling sort, which always put me on edge. Anyone who smiled all the time clearly suffered from a mental imbalance. But today, his mouth was set straight in a frown. Whatever he was telling Cecile had upset her. I could feel her anguish thick on my mind, and I watched her drop the peach, then bury her face in her hands. What had he said? I'd have heard about it if something had happened outside. So it wasn't to do with her family. He was probably making up some lie about me or Trollus, something that would turn her against us. I fought the urge to go to her side, to tell Christophe to bugger off while I comforted my wife. My Cecile. Mine. For now. Until she leaves you to rot in the dark. I shuddered, suppressing the thought. They were arguing now, but I couldn't hear their words. If I used magic to amplify them, everyone near the alley would hear them as well. What he was telling her was eliciting surprise and bewilderment, which meant more lies. Cecile closed her eyes, and I saw her lips form my name. Tristan isn't. I couldn't make out the rest. I wasn't what? What lies was he telling about me? Or worse, what truths? My hands balled into fists of frustration as I watched the human boy reach down and take her hand, his thumb stroking her knuckles. I could see plainly on his face that he wanted to do more, and she didn't pull away. She was conflicted. My chest felt hollow, and I could feel my breath coming in short little gasps. He was going to take her away from me. Fury like nothing I had felt before filled the space where emptiness had once been, and I strode out into the market. Cecile's guards started in surprise as I pushed past them. "Don't interfere," I hissed. "In fact, make yourselves scarce. I'll handle this one."
Chapter 30. Cecile. Christophe handed me a peach from a basket in the cart, and I bit into it, relishing the sweet juices that filled my mouth and trickled down my fingers. "Summer is nearly gone, then?" I asked, eyeing the cart full of produce. "Aye, harvests have already begun." He frowned, his tan skin crinkling a bit around eyes as blue as my own. One endless season down here, I reckon. I shrugged, snagging another peach from the cart. I sat down on the fountain edge and bit into it. Chris moved over to sit next to me, but the dark glares on my guards' faces made him lean against the wagon instead. Have you seen my family? Are they well? It was information I probably could have gotten from the trolls, many spies, but it was better coming from Chris, who knew me, knew my family. I saw Fred in the Trianon markets a week ago, Chris said, picking at one of his fingernails. He's not been back to the farm much, I don't think, though he says your father and Gran are well. I think he... You think he? I prompted curiously. Chris sighed, letting his hands fall to his sides. I think he blames himself for not being in Goshawk's Hollow. Thinks if he'd been riding with you, nothing would have happened. And it's been so long now, no sign of bones, but also no word from you, so everyone thinks that you're... dead. He nodded and lowered his voice. I'd tell them otherwise if I could. I can't even get my lips to form the words. Makes me sick to my stomach to even try. I'm sorry, Cecile. I stared at the half-eaten peach in my hand, not feeling hungry anymore. It was one thing to know that my family missed me, but quite another to know my brother blamed himself for my disappearance. Fred was talking about resigning his post with the regent to go looking for you. Now, he was drunk as a skunk when he told me this, mind you, Chris added. But I know for a fact that your mother has offered a reward for any news about where you are. I think she's who pushed him to it. I buried my face in my hands. He can't do that. All he ever wanted was to be a soldier. From between my fingers, I mumbled. My mother, she was upset that I left. Aye, tore up her apartments in the palace, and then had the regent send soldiers out to scour the countryside for you. She did? I looked up, stunned. Never in my wildest dreams had I thought my mother would be so grieved by my loss. Chris nodded, and to my surprise, he knelt down in front of me. I inhaled, and I could smell the tang of ocean spray, the sweetness of hay, and the hint of sweat from exertion under the sun. He smelled human. He smelled like home. She's offered 50 gold pieces for word of you, Cecile. And she's a wealthy woman. She could pay more. Enough to buy you from them. I felt suddenly cold, and the peach fell from my stiff fingers, rolling next to the wagon wheel. No.
Just think it through, Cecile. The trolls love their gold. Your mother could pay them whatever it is they wanted. You could swear magic oaths to keep your mouth shut about Trollis, and you'd be free.
No. It was the only word I could manage.
It could happen, Cecile, Chris insisted, mistaking the meaning of my refusal. For trolls, there is always a price. We just have to figure out what yours is.
I shook my head rapidly. No, Chris, I don't want to leave. His eyes widened.
Why?
I won't leave Tristan. Not for anything. I met Chris's stunned gaze. I love him. Shock turned to disgust, and he recoiled back on his heels away from me.
You can't be serious.
I love him, I repeated. I won't leave, ever.
How can you love one of them?
He asked, his face twisting like he had bitten into something bitter.
They're monsters, Cecile. Wicked, nasty, selfish, greedy monsters. I've seen them slit a man's throat for whistling at one of their women. I saw another man smothered with their magic because they thought he'd lied to them. Oh, some of them might be pretty enough to look at, I'll give you that. But inside, they're as cold as steel.
He glanced at my troll guards, who, although they were too distant to hear our words, looked none too pleased with the exchange. Cecile, they aren't even human. He isn't human. You might as well be in love with a pit viper. I jerked back, furious. You don't even know him. Tristan isn't like that.
I've been coming to Trollis almost all my life, Cecile. My father has been coming here for nearly all of his, and his father before him, and his father before that. You think you know them, but you don't. They are pure evil.
You are wrong to think they are any worse than we are, I argued, and wrong to say we rule ourselves any more benevolently than the troll kings have ruled their subjects.
You've lost your mind, Chris hissed.
They enslave their own, murder their own. They are incapable of any sort of decency. I closed my eyes. Tristan is different. He wouldn't hurt anyone. He loves me. My voice sounded plaintive and pathetic. I had no ground to stand on. I knew the troll's dark history. It had been Tristan who told me of it. But in my heart, I knew he was different. He wasn't like the kings of past. Chris closed his hand over mine. It was warm, but not in the feverish way of the trolls. He turned my hand over and our fingers linked, his tanned and calloused from years of labor in the fields, mine pale as marble and buffed smooth by my maids. Cecile, you must leave this place. Already you've changed. Faded. His dark thumb brushed over my skin. Trollis is killing you. White, hot fury lanced through my mind with a force that sent me reeling.
Get your hands off of her, said a voice behind me.
Chris raised my hand, kissed my knuckles gently, and then got to his feet. Very brave, but also very stupid. Which he probably realized when a fist of magic hammered into his stomach, tossing him against the wagon. The mule brayed unhappily, pinning its ears against its head. I was on my feet and between them in a flash. Stop it! I pressed my hands against Tristan's chest, trying to keep some distance between the two. He's telling me news about my family. Tristan didn't even look at me. His eyes remained fixed on Chris.
She doesn't need to speak to the likes of you to have news about her family.
The likes of me?
I heard Chris come up behind me, and I turned, slamming a hand against his chest to keep him from coming any closer. Let it go, Chris, I warned. But he paid no more attention to me than Tristan had.
The likes of me is the same as the likes of your wife, Chris snapped. I've known her all my life. I know her father and her grandmother. I'm friends with her brother. I've danced with her at festivals and walked her home from her lessons in town. We're the same people.
She's nothing like you,
Tristan sneered, his tone making me flinch. It made him sound like his father.
She is my wife. She is Princess of Trollis, and you are not fit company for her.
She's your prisoner.
Tristan showed no visible reaction, but I felt Chris's words strike him to the core. I turned, pressing my back against Tristan and pulling his arm around me. That isn't true, Chris. I told you. I'm here because I want to be.
That true, my lord? Does she have the choice to leave if she wanted to? Has she ever had the choice?
Tristan was silent. I could hear his heart beating furiously where my head rested against his chest.
Just as a thought,
Chris's face was dark with anger.
You stole her from her kin, and now she's your prisoner. She might say she loves you, but I don't believe it for a minute. You've either put some magic on her mind, or she's just saying it because it's what you want to hear.
That isn't true, I shouted. You shut your mouth, Christophe. I looked up at Tristan. It isn't true. You know I love you. He refused to meet my eyes, but his grip around my waist increased, drawing me tight against him.
We have no such magic.
His sword slithered as he pulled it out of its scabbard.
I could have your head for this boy, or perhaps cut you open and leave you on the street to die slowly. I could kill your father for bringing such an insolent brat into my presence.
His grip on my side was becoming painful, his fingers grinding the bones of my corset against my ribs. I closed my eyes, fear building in my gut. This wasn't Tristan I was hearing. It was his father's voice, and the voices of all those horrible, selfish kings before him. The voice of a troll.
No,
I whispered.
Please don't.
Aye, you could, Chris said, and I saw the first traces of fear on his face.
Then he looked at me.
Seems to me he's just like all the rest of them, Cecile. You have no right to use her name,
Tristan snapped, and I gasped under the pain in my side.
You're hurting her,
Chris shouted. Everything happened too quickly. Chris swung his fist at Tristan's face, but it bounced off a shield of magic. Tristan pushed me out of the way, and my feet tangled in my skirts as I fell in a heap. Neither of them noticed.
Can't even fight like a real man, Chris shouted, always hiding behind your magic. Hardly,
Tristan replied. Then he punched Chris in the face. Chris staggered and then with a shout leapt forward, knocking Tristan backwards. They grappled on the ground, both of them landing heavy blows, and neither of them paying any attention to my pleas for them to stop. Chris was older, and his body was heavy from muscle that only hard labor could bring. But his was human strength. It was only a few moments until Tristan had him pinned. Fingers latched tight around Chris's throat.
You're killing him!
I shrieked, pulling at his wrists, trying to make him let go.
Tristan, stop this! Please!
I pounded my fists against his shoulders, dug my nails into his arms, but it was as if I were invisible. Chris's face turned purple and his attempts to dislodge Tristan's hands grew as weak and ineffective as my own.
Please, stop!
I begged, but he wasn't listening to me. So I screamed, my voice echoing through Trollis. Boots pounded towards us, and several trolls, including my mysteriously absent guards, appeared. Chris's father was with them.
Stop them!
I shouted. Jerome tried to run forward, but one of the trolls snatched him off his feet. He dangled helplessly in the air, terrified eyes on his dying son.
Help him!
I screamed. The trolls exchanged amused glances with each other, and one of them shook his head at me. They wouldn't help. If their prince wanted to strangle a human boy, why should they stop him? I grabbed hold of Tristan's shoulders again and pulled with all my strength, but it wasn't enough. Chris was going to die, and I was powerless. Dropping to my knees, I pressed my lips to Tristan's ear.
I will not forgive you if you do this. I will never forgive you if you kill him.
I felt realization click in his mind, rage fleeing in the face of horror and guilt. His hands jerked away from Chris's neck, and he stared at them as if amazed at what they'd been doing. Then he rose smoothly to his feet. Chris rolled on his side, gasping for breath, redness receding from his face.
Are you all right?
I asked, touching his shoulder. He jerked away as if I'd burned him.
So strong, he rasped out. How can anyone be that strong?
They all are, you idiot, I whispered. His eyes flickered up, looking over my shoulder at Tristan like a sheep watching a wolf.
Then the witch was right to lock them down here. Nothing could ever stop them.
He's right.
I looked at Tristan, who stood with his arms crossed, his face bleak.
No, he isn't, I replied.
I made my voice firm, but it would be a lie to say I was as confident about that fact as I had been an hour ago. Tristan refused to meet my gaze. Instead, he gestured to the troll holding Jerome.
Let him go.
Jérôme staggered as the magic released him and hurried over to his son. Chris was on his feet now, holding onto the edge of the wagon to keep his balance. Jérôme cuffed him hard.
Blasted fool. What were you thinking?
He turned to Tristan and bowed.
My deepest apologies, Your Highness. The lad is young, impulsive.
Tristan didn't reply, only watched me in silence. Reaching into his pocket, he tossed a gold coin through the air at Jérôme, who caught it.
For the peach she ate.
Jérôme looked at the coin glittering in his palm. Then he tossed it back.
We've already been paid for the load, my lord. Market rate. Not a penny more, not a penny less.
He inclined his head to Tristan.
We know your rules, and we follow them.
The last bit I was certain he directed at his son, but if Chris heard, it did not register on his face.
You're a good man, Jérôme,
Tristan said, voice heavy as he turned away from us. I watched the trolls make way for him as he strode out of the market, and then I glared at Chris.
You're wrong about them. You're wrong about him.
Grabbing up my skirts, I ran after Tristan, guards hot on my heels. I found him in a tavern that did not normally cater to noblemen. Not that it was rough or run down, nothing in Trollis was. But it carried the less expensive products that appealed to the working class, the half-bloods. Noon had not yet passed, and the room was empty except for Tristan and the proprietor, who was drying a glass with the vigor of an anxious man.
Something to drink, my lady?
He asked as I made my way through the tables.
I shook my head and sat down across from Tristan.
A glass with amber liquid sat in front of him untouched, the sharp scent of whiskey rising up to assault my nostrils. A dark bottle sat corked next to his hand. My gran always said that drink might make you forget your problems, but it doesn't solve anything, I said. Besides, I've never even seen a drunk troll.
Your gran had a lot to say.
Tristan swished the liquid around the glass and tossed it back.
Most grandmothers have a lot to say, and they are usually right.
Perhaps I'd be wiser if mine were still alive to fill my ears with such helpful proverbs.
He reached for the bottle, but I pulled it away.
No.
His hand dropped to the table.
You should go, Cecile.
No.
Every inch of me felt cold beneath the weight of his misery.
I hurt you. I nearly killed your friend for speaking the truth, for touching you.
He rested his chin in his hands.
He was right. Everything he said was true.
Not everything, I whispered. I love you, Tristan. I want to be here with you.
I should have distracted your guards and let him steal you away in his wagon,
Tristan said, his eyes blank and distant.
He fancies you. Has for a long time, I think. He'd make a good husband. You could live on a farm with golden wheat fields and have golden-haired babies.
He sounded almost wistful.
No!
Tears trickled down my face, my misery magnifying his until I felt overwhelmed.
Under the sun, with your family, that's where you belong.
Every inch of me hurt. I couldn't think, couldn't breathe. Tristan was going to send me away because he thought that deep down it was what I wanted. He would think he was doing it for my own good, that I would be happier. But the thought of never seeing his face or feeling the heat of his skin against mine, his lips against my lips, caused greater pain than any torturer could devise.
I was planning on leaving them anyway. And besides,
I struggled to articulate myself. Even if 10 years passed between now and the time I saw my family, they'd still be my family. They'd still love me as much and the same way as they always had. But if Tristan and I were parted for 10 years, what
was between us was new and fragile. Time would not leave it unscathed, and the thought of losing it broke my heart. You're more important to me now, I finally said. My words finally snapped him out of his miserable reverie, and his eyes focused on me.
You don't mean that. The distance would diminish the bond. You'd think about us less and less until one day your time in Trollis would seem like a bad dream that left a strange mark on your hand.
I wiped the wet streaks off my face with my sleeve and met his eyes. And would you forget about me? Would the memory of the human girl you married and loved fade away until it seemed like she was just a bad dream? His eyes darkened, and he looked away.
No. Never.
Then how can you believe I would forget? I reached for his hands, but he pulled them off the table. I love you, Tristan. Given the choice, I would stay. You must believe that.
I can't.
His voice was so quiet I barely heard him. Why? I slammed my fists down on the table. Why can't you believe me? Why don't you trust me?
Because you're human, Cecile. You can lie, even to yourself.
I wrapped my arms around my torso, trying to ward off the sorrow and misery like it was the cold.
Go, Cecile. I need to be alone. I need to think.
The bench scraped against the ground when I pushed it back, but that was the only sound in the room. I walked to the entrance and opened the door, but it was as far as I could stand to go. From around the corner, I heard Tristan ask the tavern keeper for paper, pen, and ink. I stood frozen in place, desperate to know what he was writing. A note to put in my pocket when he shoved me in a cart destined for outside. Or something else.
Take this to Lady Anais, Tristan said,
and I felt as if someone had punched me in the gut. Shutting the door softly, I hurried down the street so that the troll delivering the message wouldn't see me. Wanted to be alone, did he? More like he didn't want to be with me. I had to believe him when Tristan said he harbored no feelings for her. But they were still the closest of friends, and it hurt that he'd rather turn to her for comfort than me. Wiping all evidence of tears from my face, I attempted to walk with purpose. But I had none. Instead, I wandered through Trollis, doing my best to ignore the curious and often dark looks from the trolls who saw me pass, and on the faces of my grumbling guards, always two paces behind me. Eventually, I wound up at the door of Pierre's house. Knocking, I waited a moment, and then went in. Pierre?
Lady Cecile!
The little troll rolled in on his stool, a wide grin on his face, that fell away when he saw me.
What is the matter, child?
Stacks of paper lifted off the only other chair in the room and settled on the ground.
Sit, sit. So sad.
He rolled next to me and took my hand, patting it gently.
I am thinking it is because of the altercation between His Highness and the human boy. Am I correct? Gossip, it travels fast in Trollis.
I nodded miserably, my heart listening to Tristan's emotions. Misery was gone now, and in its place was grim determination. I bit my lip and tried to keep my composure. Tristan was coming this way. It wouldn't be long now.
Young men in love, they are all fools, trolls and humans. It makes no difference.
He almost killed him, Pierre. The little troll's face looked grim.
I heard as much, he sighed. Not a fair fight. It never is between trolls and humans. Strength from another world.
My ears perked up at that. Perhaps Pierre would not be so reluctant to divulge information about their history. Is that where trolls come from? Another world? I feigned ignorance to see what he would say. He smiled and pressed a finger against my lips.
Some things are better left a mystery, no?
The little glass balls representing the planets and moons rose up in the air and began to circle the glowing sun. I watched with fascination as they circled round and round, wondering in which one trolls might belong. Then they all fell away, until only the moon and the sun were left. They circled each other, both equally bright, one silver and one gold, like Tristan and I. Pierre, if the curse were broken, do you think the trolls would go to war with the humans to take the isle back? He looked away from me, his brow furrowed.
Yes, he said. With Thibault as king, I think freedom would mean much bloodshed for humanity.
But what about Tristan?
Tristan is not king yet.
But he will be, one day, I persisted. The little troll was quiet for a long time.
I do not know what he would do, he finally said,
the moon and sun settling into his hands.
I think that might very much depend on you, my lady.
I closed my eyes. It was an answer, but not one that helped me at all.
Pierre? Yes, my dearest lady?
If you had the chance, would you leave Trollis to go above? I didn't need to open my eyes to know he was smiling.
Oh, yes, Cécile, he said. I would very much like to see the planets, the stars.
He sighed.
I would climb the highest mountain, build the greatest telescope that ever existed, and I would watch them until my light went out.
A ghost of a smile drifted across my lips. Thank you, Pierre.
What for, my lady?
For giving me the answer I needed. The door slammed open, and I turned to look at Tristan.
You need to come with me, Cécile. Now.
My time was up. Chapter 31. Cécile.
Hang back, Tristan snapped at my guards as we left Pierre's home. I'll not have you eavesdropping on my every word.
They gave each other concerned looks, but the expression on Tristan's face was enough to triple the distance at which they normally followed me. Where are we going? I asked, although in my heart I already knew. Tristan wanted me to leave. As much as he might love me, he would never trust me, and without trust, our love was doomed.
River Road, he muttered under his breath.
I wanted to argue with him, plead for him to let me stay. But what was the point? I couldn't make him trust me. I had no way to prove that, despite having been brought to Trollis against my will, it would now be against my will to leave. Knowing my feelings was not the same as knowing my thoughts. The guards won't let me pass.
No, but they won't stop Anais.
I stared up at him, confused. What?
You'll see.
Tristan led me through a series of alleyways, and then stopped at a door in the back of a building. At his knock, a man opened the door and bowed deeply.
My lord, my lady.
His chocolate-brown hair marked him as part human, but Tristan did not introduce us. The man gestured to the entrance of another room, but did not follow us in.
About time. Do you think I have all day to waste sitting around waiting on you?
Anais reclined on a sofa, smirk firmly in place. I scowled at her and her grin grew even wider.
No need for that, Cécile. I am doing you a favor, after all. No, you are not.
Tristan snapped.
You are doing me a favor, and it is from me whom you will collect.
She got to her feet and made her way to Tristan's side. The parlor seemed too small to contain the three of us. Anais was too close,
and the satisfaction on her face made me want to hit her. Not that that would go well. You don't do anything that doesn't benefit you in some way, Anais. I felt too drained, too tired to deal with her today. Even at my best, she was better. This is no favor. As you like, Anais laughed. Turn around, Tristan. I'm not your wife. Yet. A wink accompanied this last bit, and an urge to strike out became almost unmanageable.
Get on with it, Anais,
Tristan said darkly, but he turned around. Help me, she said, turning her back to me. We need to switch dresses. I'd never wear something like that. It's going to take more than a dress for anyone to mistake the two of us, I replied. But I began undoing the gold buttons running down the back of her gown. Her skin felt soft and overheated beneath my fingers, the lace of her undergarments reminding me of the tattoo on Mark's fingers, black against porcelain white. When she was unbuttoned, I pulled off my own dress, needing no assistance to extract myself from its forgiving design. When she turned around, I flushed, profoundly grateful that Tristan had his back turned. Fully clothed, she was the most beautiful girl I had ever met. Half naked, I was certain she was every man's fantasy. Beside her, I felt like a troll. Shorter, plumper, with a smaller chest and a bigger behind. We put on each other's clothes, her dress so tight I could hardly breathe, and mine hanging off her slender frame. Then she pulled off her shoes, and as she settled on to her bare feet, I realized she wasn't all that much taller than me, after all. You're short for a troll. She raised one finger to her lips and then handed me the shoes. No one needs to know that. I put them on, wobbling, on the high platforms, and wondering how I would get more than 2 steps without falling. In the meantime, Anais pulled a black wig out of her bag, along with a golden framed mirror. Hair is tricky, she muttered. It took a bit of doing to get all of my red hair tucked beneath the wig, and my ribs began to ache from my extra tight corset. Sweat trickled down my back as I took one shallow breath after another. Anais held up the mirror and examined her face. Now for the illusion, she said, and her brow furrowed in concentration. I watched in amazement as her black hair turned red and her features shifted until the girl looking back at me was my mirror image. And now for you. Warm magic washed over my face, but otherwise I could feel nothing. Done, she said, my face smirking in a way that betrayed the girl lurking underneath. I'd never make that face. She handed me the mirror and I held it up to my face. An unhappy-looking Anais stared out at me, silver eyes and all. You shouldn't frown like that, she said. You'll get wrinkles. I lifted my hand and made a gesture that was extremely unladylike. Blue eyes widened, and Anais, as me, shrugged. Just saying. Tristan, you can turn around now. He turned and looked from one of us to the other. It will do. He took my hand and squeezed it in a way that was probably meant to be reassuring, but it wasn't. All this costuming and deception was just a step in the process of us being torn apart. Please don't make me do this, Tristan, I whispered. I don't want to go. He shook his head.
I have to know, Cecile.
He bent to kiss me, but I turned away, not fond of the idea that he'd be kissing Anais's face, not mine. This is all very touching, Anais said, interrupting. But my magic tends to grow bored and wander if unattended. You've got maybe half an hour with my face and then it will fade. Tristan nodded.
Where will you be?
In the glass gardens, wandering around looking forlorn.
Are you certain you want to do this, Anais?
Tristan and Anais stared at each other for several long moments. I flinched at their familiarity.
It was something he and I had never had.
He won't let you off easily for helping me.
I never said no to you, Tristan. Never denied you anything. She lifted her chin defiantly. And I never will.